Hello, everybody. I'm Matt Seidel, along with Derek Seidel and Josh Trope, and this is Coach Speak. Welcome back to the pod, everyone. We are joined today by Scott Norkey, whose unique resume includes a stint as the Tecumseh High School varsity boys basketball coach and 9 years of officiating basketball, including the last five at the high school level. Scott, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Scott, you know, last time I saw you, I think we were yelling at each other over at Jackson College. You must have thought I was questioning a call. I was just inviting you to be on the podcast. I mean, I know I got a speech impediment, but I think you just misunderstood what I was saying there. So just wanted to make sure we got that clear.
Okay.
Hey, man, a lot of coaches, face it, have no clue when it comes to officiating, like Josh and Derek. They would make terrible officials. I've been officiating games from the sideline for years. Most officials don't know the first thing about coaching, but you've managed to do both at a pretty high level. How did all that come about?
So I started actually coaching my son when he was 10 years old in travel basketball, you know, those fast tournaments that Ron Reed yep. puts on. And we were a team of, we had five kids. Well, we had kids from five different schools at one point, but we're talking schools like Quincy, Pittsford, Hillsdale, Tecumseh. And so we played from, he was 10, and our last year together was his end of his freshman year going into his sophomore year. So we did the whole travel basketball. We actually did play in a couple legit AAU tournaments. We went to Chicago, played in one of those. Played in the AYBT tournament in Mount Pleasant twice and won that twice, and actually won the national tournament in the Spieth Center in Fort Wayne his last year playing. And then I also coached high school ball from, I want to say it was 2009 I first started in Tecumseh as an assistant. Then I was the JV coach. Last couple years as JV coach, I was under Mark Comstock, which anybody in this area knows Mark Comstock because he's coached in a lot of different high schools now. Very successful, very brilliant man when it comes to basketball. And then coached Tecumseh varsity. The first year I didn't get hired until October. So that year was kind of, I don't know, it was tough. That's a year actually, I believe, Josh, you won the state title that year with Milan.
Yeah, one of our toughest games in that run was actually the first game of the playoffs at your place in that pre-district.
Yeah,
you guys gave us all we could handle for three quarters.
Yeah, and then the next year we had the team for the whole summer, and we won 9 games. Tecumseh hadn't won 10 or more games since I think it was 95 or something like that. We lost to Austin Davis in the district finals that year. The next year, some things happened at the school. They made a whole lot of changes with coaching, and so I was no longer coaching. Sat around the house, kind of bitter for a while. Wife at that time said, look, you got to do something. So I got a hold of some guys from Flint and started reffing travel ball. And from there, my son was still in high school playing high school ball. So it was tough to ref any, you know, organized ball. All of it was travel or scrimmages. But as soon as he went into college, that would have been 2018, 2019, I started reffing JV, and then this year will be my third or fourth full year of doing full varsity games.
Gotcha.
Scott, what do you like most about officiating, and what's the toughest part about it?
I think it's just being around the game of basketball still. I like the interaction with the kids. I like the interaction with the coaches. So for me, if I'm not coaching, it's another great way to be involved. The toughest part is I think just dealing with A, kids that have an attitude on the court, or B, parents in the stands. I don't know about coaching wise anymore, but I know if we could just get all the parents out of the stands, and I'll tell you what, it was great. I hated reffing with a mask on, but those that year when what they were only allowing two parents in or something like that, it was a lot better. You didn't have to deal with the yelling or the screaming or, you know, a parent waiting for you after the game, you know, things like that. So
yeah. People just appreciated being there, I think, that year.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm curious, like, would you have any interest in ever getting back into coaching? Or are you kind of like settled now into the reffing side of things?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, I coached. So this last year, there was a group of sixth graders, Luma Christi kids, that they asked me to come to their practice. So I came to the practice, and I think we had about four or five practices, maybe six. And then they asked me to coach in a tournament. So I coached their tournament. And you're talking, you know, these are all JCMS, Luma Christi kids. I still call it JCMS, but so we weren't picked from different schools. We handled ourselves pretty well, I thought. And then, you know, I thought I'd get back into coaching, but things just didn't work out. So I'm right back to pretty much a full schedule again already for this coming basketball season.
You know, I assume, you know, when I'm coaching, I always assume most officials probably played the game at some point because they just have the instincts. They kind of know how the game works. But I never feel that many of them have coached. And you've got that unique perspective where you coach the game and now you're officiating it. And sometimes, let's face it, coaches and officials butt heads a little bit. But I guess how has that perspective helped you as an official, in your opinion?
I have a tendency to look at it at times from a coach's side. You know, I can look at things a little differently. So I get both sides of it. You know, I can look at it like, okay, foul split is 6-0, you know, whether it's a team is hacking 6-0 or, you know, but I still, if a coach is talking in my ear, I still will listen fully of, hey, you know, and that coach says, you looking at that foul split? Yeah, I am, coach. I sure am. Yep. So I think that side of it where, you know, believe it or not, I've ref with some guys that they don't have playing experience and they don't have coaching experience.
Yeah, that's tough then.
Yeah, it is. But I've also ref with some guys like that who then turn around and they study the game. And so some of them are even better because they've completely studied. They know every single rule because they've read the rule book up and down, up and down. They've even watched a bunch of basketball. So, you know, it can go both ways.
Coach, I've always been interested. What is the discussion like in the officials' locker room prior to the game? And then again at halftime. And the reason I ask is, are you talking about the two teams that are coming up? You know, like, hey, I've had these guys before. I've had this coach before. Hey, this team is a great player. And then at halftime, are there things like, hey, you know, we called that really tight. We got to get into a little more of a flow in the second half. Like, let us know, what do those discussions look like prior to and at halftime?
I think it all depends on who you're reffing with. You know, if I'm with Will Godfrey, you know, I'm going to sit there and I'm probably not going to say much at all. And I'm going to listen to everything that comes out of his mouth. Tim Hoffman, same way. You know, guys like that, that have been around the game for a long, long time. And they're very well respected in the area, you know, or in Jackson County, in the SEC conference, in a lot of different conferences. Yeah, we do have those conversations. You know, we're going to have that conversation of, okay, you know, we have this team and this team. It's a rivalry game. You know, make sure we're keeping our eye out. You know, if somebody's going to the scores table or if we got a jump ball, don't have all three people looking over at the arrow. Just one guy look over there. Everybody else keep an eye at where the basketball is. You know, so those conversations are definitely had. And then at halftime, we definitely have kind of like a coach. We're going to have that discussion of, hey, you know, there was this call halfway through the second quarter. What did you have on that call? You know, what did you have? And we may have that discussion also just to try and tighten some things up also. Or, you know, it may be a spot where it's that gray area in the court of, you know, and then we'll look at it like, well, like I just said, you know, I had this on that. Well, I had this. What was your angle? And we'll talk about those things.
Coach, I'm curious, you know, what the differences are in reffing the boys' high school game and the girls' high school game. I know there's obviously a little bit of a different flow. I mean, every game can have a different flow, but I'm curious if from an official's perspective, if you have to look for different things or you're focused on different things.
I'll be dead honest. I call the game exactly the same way between girls and boys. I think the difference is when you have a couple of good basketball teams and you have a couple of bad basketball teams. I think that's where the difference of the calling or the approach you might take. But I'll with the difference from girls and boy and you know, men and women, girls and boys, I've never really taken any difference of, okay, I'm gonna let this call because it's girls. I'm gonna let this go because it's girls basketball. You know, I've never thought that. You know, I don't know, maybe in the post, if you have, you know, a couple of big 6'8" kids and they're banging a little bit, you might let that go a little more than in a girls game. But I've also had some games where we've had some pretty decent post players in the girls game, and we've let them, quote unquote, play a little bit underneath. So
is there a particular, I mean, you know, you've watched the college game on TV. They must say it 10 times a game that, you know, the hardest call for officials is the block charge, and it might very well be, but is that do you have the same opinion, or is there another call out there that's just as challenging, or maybe a series of calls that are a challenge every night?
I think the block call is difficult. I think everybody's going to say that. That's a difficult, especially now, you know, way back in the day when we played, you could set up for a charge 20 feet from the hoop because you know the guy is just going to come on a straight line and run you over, right? Well, now I think one of the toughest things is the quote-unquote Euro step. You know, they have made it a little easier in the rule book to define it, but it's tough when you have a really quick kid with quick feet. You know, it's tough to see that, you know, because the way it's defined now is if he's picking the ball up and that back foot is still down, then he can take that step with the right. But if he comes back to the left, it's a travel because his foot was still down. So that was his pivot. But if he does it all in one motion, picks the ball up, picks his left foot up at the same time, comes down on his right, he can come back to his left and then he can lay it up. And so, but come on, at game speed,
right?
That's a tough one.
Let me build on that real quick too. I mean, my teams, I don't know, over the years, we might take less charges than any team in the state. And it's kind of embarrassing when I look at the numbers at the end of the year. People probably think that's just bad coaching, and maybe it is. But I just refuse to teach kids to flop. Like, I'm an old school. I just can't stand it. As an official, what are your thoughts on that? Is it a problem in the game right now? Is it something you guys look for and not reward? Or is it something that's really hard to determine?
I think, you know, when you got a kid that his reputation is flopping, you'll have that pregame talk.
Okay.
You know, but I'll tell you, if you got a kid that takes one in the chest, he's probably going to get that charge call.
Yeah.
You know, that's my philosophy. And, you know, I'm going to say that, you know, what I'm talking about here is my experiences, my opinions. Obviously the MHSA is not endorsing me to say all these things. So
right.
These are all my opinions and my experiences. So,
you know, obviously there's a shortage and we all know that. And then we're also living in a world where inflation is tough, and it's getting better. You know, it's not as bad as it was a few months ago, but gas prices are still high. And so can I ask, what do you get paid? Or maybe not you, but specifically, what are varsity officials getting paid to do a girls and boys game? And does it vary between leagues? And then what do officials get paid for JV games?
So here, I'll look it up right now. So I know a bunch of conferences just raised their pay. So for a middle school game now, you're going to get your middle school games. You're going to do like the 7B team and then the 7A, and you're going to get $90. So 45 a game for that, which I think that's very reasonable. I believe most of the conferences are now 70 to 75. Yes. Between 70 and 75 for a varsity game. And I think the double headers are now, like, for a freshman game, it's 55 now. So it went from 45 to 55. So they're trying to make it, and a JV game is 60. So you do a freshman JV doubleheader, and what's that, $115? That's it's not a bad thing, especially, you know, you're done with the JV game by 7, you know. So, oh, there's a huge shortage. I mean, I did 9 triple headers last year.
Yeah, I believe it. Is it in the girls' side or just –
No, a lot of it, like some boys of it was JV boys, then varsity girls, varsity boys.
Wow. Yeah.
Which, you know, the last two games you're in a 3-man, so it's not as much.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but I mean, it's so you do feel the pay is decent, because I've always said that if we would just pay guys a little bit more, maybe we could get a few more guys out as well. But it's not as bad as I thought. But I still think you guys certainly deserve at least that, if not more.
Yeah, the I-8, I just looked. The I-8 now for a varsity game is up to $85, where last year it was $75. And that's right, a lot of my games are this year in the I-8. I do have a couple in the SEC.
I'd make a joke, but I now, you know, have son playing in the I-8, so I'm going to leave that alone right there. But it sounds like that's – I mean, it sounds reasonable to me, $85 for a varsity game. Now, if you're doing a game at Olivet, it should definitely be over $100, I think, for the abuse you're going to take and the bad pizza they have up there.
We feed you well, and we take care of you over there in O-Town. Come on, man. I do have, I think,
a doubleheader there, girls, JV varsity in Olivet. So
I will treat you well that night. Trust me.
Coach, I'm curious, you know, you talk about how there's a shortage and it's well documented at this point. What do you think we need to do just overall as a basketball community to try to get more people into it? You know, is it really targeting younger people, or is it just, you know, do we need to like really build it up from the, you know, the middle school level up, or is, do you think guys can jump right into the varsity level? What in your opinion is a good strategy to go about trying to fix that issue?
Well, I think what I've tried to do is I've done it with a couple of Hanover Horton kids. I've also done it with my son, is start them with some summer ball, some, you know, a team camp, some scrimmages. But, you know, the coaches have to realize that, you know, it's summertime. And I understand, I was one of those intense coaches too. I understand you're working on things, but if you have a younger official, I think we need to kind of give that younger official some leeway on, you know, he might have just blew a call. You know, I remember my son when he first started, it was like, holy cow, I had to watch his area and mine. And now I don't, like, we reffed in Ann Arbor this year together, and we did a whole round read tournament. We did 15 games in a day. And I never once had to bail him out or look in his area. I mean, it was, you know, but there is a shortage. Just my own personal opinion here, I don't think young kids, young men, 18 to whatever, 18 to 25, whatever, I don't think they want to get yelled at. I don't think they want to deal with it, no matter what you pay. I mean, you know, I've reffed in some leagues that are paying summer ball $30 and you're done in 45 minutes. That's pretty good money, but I've had guys that, you know, they'll do one tournament and go, I'm out. I'm not dealing with this.
Yeah. Going back to the Ron Reed tournament, though, that, my friend, is a great example of why, one, I'm glad my kids are done playing youth travel basketball, and two, why you never want to be caught up in the 7, 8, or 9 p.m. championship games, because those officials, no legs, zombie nation, 15th, you know, you're playing in a championship game, heated game, and these poor officials are on their 15th game of the day. Ron Reed, I know you listen to the podcast. You need to get an official change like 8 hours through, brother. You got to help these guys out. Come on.
But hold on. The problem is guys don't want to only do 7-8 games.
Right. They want the 15 games.
Right. Yeah. And the thing about when I ref those tournaments is I remember coaching in those tournaments. So I've always told, when I get refs for Ron or I get refs for summer ball, you know, like, hey, no one should know you're doing 15 games today.
Good point.
You should give the same effort in the first game that you do in the 15th. Well, then what do you get? You get guys that don't cross the half court in the first game because they don't want to cross it in 15.
Yeah, I'm so glad an official said that, not one of the three of us.
Hey Scott, what gym? I mean, you can be honest with us, or maybe not be honest with us, but what gym do you just kind of dread going into? You know, this is gonna be a tough night. Like the gym, the student section is gonna be on you. Parents are gonna be on. Coach might, like, is there a place where you just don't want to go?
Dread is the wrong word. I mean, how about like it's just a tough place to officiate.
It's a tough place to officiate. You're right, not dread.
Oh well, we could break this down into categories. We could go fans, we could go just the overall gym. I think one of the toughest gyms is it still called Britton Deerfield? I mean, you're on the baseline and you literally have, I don't know, have you guys ever seen the gym?
Yeah, I've been in the gym, and there might be a foot between the baseline and the wall.
So
yeah.
The first time I reffed, I go up with my hand and I go to make the call for the ball to go the other way, and my arm goes halfway and I hit the concrete on the wall. You know, it's like, I mean, that's just a tough, that's a tough place to ref. Now, I don't ref there anymore because I don't travel that side of, you know, I think there's a few different places, and I just won't mention them, that right. The fans are just, I don't know.
Let's go another direction then. What are some of the most fun places to officiate games in? Let's stay positive.
Good adjustment. I think
that all depends on who's playing.
Okay.
If you go into a gym and it's Marshall versus Coldwater last year when they were both loaded, that is a fun game to ref. I mean, that is a, you know.
So you're looking for high quality basketballs, really.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, you get a game like that and the game is going so well. You know, I remember we did a game I did with Will Godfrey, and it was like, I think the foul split was like 2-1 after the first quarter. I don't know how many times we really blew our whistle for any violations. It was just really, really good basketball, and it was good to ref. Now, those games are fun to ref when you get two competitive basketball teams that are good at basketball, because there's a difference between two competitive teams, but it's bad hacking, you know, basketball.
Right. 2-1 foul split. That sounds like a center Napoleon game, because neither one of those teams guard each other. They just score. That's how I've seen a few of those games. I've seen Travis and Derek play those games before. So
yeah, I think I had Derek's first game of the year last year versus Columbia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's a bit of an ugly game. Neither team could really score, but it was good atmosphere and everything.
Yeah, it was the first game of the year, too. Yeah.
Coach, I'm curious just for you to talk a little bit about how tough it is to keep your emotions out of the game as a ref. I know, like you talked about how you get fans yelling at you, coaches are on you, and sometimes it's just beyond reason. And like you said, some people come in and ref and, you know, they're done with it quickly because of that. You know, it really is. It's crazy. And I think sometimes, you know, from a coaching perspective myself, I kind of lose track of that. Like, man, it's so hard to not, you know, grow a bias in a situation. If one guy's riding you, or the fans are really on you, like how difficult is that?
I think it comes with experience, and it comes the longer you ref, and you do have to talk to yourself, you know, while you're out there. You know, if a coach is loud and he's asking you questions, he's not really on you, and maybe he's got some valid questions. You know, I think we've all, officials, coaches, everybody has let our emotions get the best of us at times. I really try not to take it personal. If a coach is really going off, you know, I guess part of it is, in my line of work for my real job, I have to make sure I stay at an even pace too. So that helps me when I ref basketball games. So
it's well known now that my boys are at Lumen Christi, and so I've heard a lot of stories about what was the best Lumen Christi team ever, and I've heard this story and that story. You know, obviously a lot of people that listen to the podcast know who Kari Willis is, and they had some really good teams there in 14 and 15. But the names and the teams that keep coming up are, you know, you, Brooks Boyer, and Chad Mortimer, that group you have there. I've heard a lot of stories and things about that. Tell us, how good were those teams? How far did you guys make it? And is it true, if you would have had Tim Crowley on that team, you could have went all the way? Because he says that's the story.
Tim Crowley was a freshman when we were seniors, so he'd have never made that team. No.
Okay.
But yeah, we were, so our junior year, let's just say, so Brooks came from Concord, if I remember correctly. He came over, I think, in the ninth grade. If I remember correctly, he might have been moved up to varsity by the end of his freshman year. And that team was that team, when we were in eighth grade, I think that team lost to Derek Coleman in the quarterfinals or regional finals. And then my freshman year, we lost to Detroit Northern, I think, again in the regionals or quarters. Our sophomore year, we didn't do that well. Junior year, we lost in the quarters at the old, was it Jenison? Is that right?
Yeah, Jenison Fieldhouse.
And then senior year, we lost in regional finals. We were, you know, me, Mortimer, Brooks, we had a big football player. That was our senior year. Then we had a big 6'7" kid that he went to Siena Heights with me. And then off the bench, we had a guy named Rob Sterrett that he probably would have started on most high school teams. I mean, he was good, fast. And then we had a couple of juniors that were pretty good. Our junior year, we had a couple of really good football players that gave us that that muscle, you know, hey, this kid's grabbing me. Okay, run him over here off a screen, you know, something like that. Our senior year, we might have been missing that, but man, we could put up some numbers. My dad still has all the tapes, all the newspaper. And I think our senior year, we might have averaged like 80 points a game.
Wow.
Yeah, we just, Mortimer's got a bunch of highlight tapes, and we just got up and down the floor. I mean, Mortimer ended up being, he went to Spring Arbor, and I went, think he went to JC for a year, and he went out to Huron University. No, he went to a junior college, Southwest Junior College. Then he went out to Huron University, and he was an All-American. And then Brooks went to Notre Dame. You know, I played at Siena Heights. So, I mean, yeah, we were talented. We had a talented group there.
I was going to jump back to the officiating part, and actually, you know, your playing days kind of lead into that, because I think, again, back to an official's instincts, and especially when they played at a high level, they get the game. They also get situations. I know you answered Derek's question earlier about, do you call a boys game or a girls game differently? And you said, honestly, no, but there are situations out there that maybe they dictate an adjustment with the official. I'm kind of curious. I mean, things like this, like blowout games, do you change anything the way you're calling it based on the score? End the game. I'm always curious with an official, you know, it's a tie game or it's a 1-point game, 12 seconds left coming out of a timeout. You know, the higher level, they seem like, man, there's nobody's going to call anything. Is that in your mind? Things like that. I mean, do you make adjustments depending on situations in a game?
So let's go to your last example.
Okay.
Because I have always argued with people. Me and my brother argue about this all the time, because he always says they should just swallow the whistle.
Right.
Okay. So my philosophy is, so a team goes to the hole, they get clobbered, but you're supposed to swallow the whistle. Don't dictate. Don't control the game like that, whatever you want to say. My thing is, by not calling that, you're making, you got to still call it. I think, you know, I think when you're talking about at the beginning of a game, you know, you make sure your first and one is a good one. You know, you don't have a kid that barely gets hit. You blow the whistle. Now he makes it. Cause guess what? Now you got to call that soft and one all night long. Cause if you don't, cause I know when I was a coach, cause if you don't call it the whole night, then I'm going to be asking you. That was, you know, there's another and one, or I'm going to ask you, what's the difference between that one in the first half and now this one? So, you know, I think when you have two good teams and two good coaches, the coaches are going to adjust to how the game is called. You know, we all know Coach Brooks at Ipsy High, and boy, his philosophy was, my kids are going to hand check the whole night, because guess what? My 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th guy coming off the bench is probably better than your starting five. So I'm going to challenge the refs to call it all night. Now, I don't think he'd ever say that, but that's, you could see it if you ever watched any of his games back then. You know, as soon as you might turn the corner on him, that hand was going right on the hip to slow you up for that split second so they get right back in front of you. I mean, Josh, you know, you've seen it.
Oh, that's straight facts right there. There's no doubt. I mean, all the good ones do it. I mean, same thing. We just talked about Mortimer. He'd probably never admit it out like on a podcast or publicly, but they would grab you on every possession knowing that they just weren't going to call it all night long. And you talk about a group of fans, by the way, that let refs have it. No, the Hanover fans will let you have it. I know, you know, that's true. So that, yeah.
So. So Mortimer, believe it or not, here's a great one. Mortimer and I, the 2 years I coached at Tecumseh, we played against each other.
Oh, I would have loved to see those games. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. That's too funny. No, Brooks teams, they definitely had their hands on it. There's no doubt about that. you know, you have a lot of friends, Scott, that you work summer games with. You're basically an assigner in the summer and for travel basketball and things like that. Probably because you have so many relationships with coaches, we all reach out to you and ask you to do that, and we feel comfortable working with you. If you were going to do a really big game, really big high school game, say a regional final or something like that, who would you want to work that game with? What two other guys would you want to, or girls would you want to be in that game with?
Ooh, that's tough. That is a tough question. I mean, if I have my choice, it'd probably be Willie Godfrey and Tim Hoffman.
That makes sense. Okay.
I mean, everybody knows who they are. I've learned a lot from them, but there's also, I mean, I could name probably 10 guys right now just off the top of my head that I would still feel very comfortable. I would say more than 10 guys.
No, that makes sense. So, because everybody respects those two guys and everybody's afraid of Will, so they're not going to yell at him, me included. And quite honestly, we're all going to yell at Tim because we've been doing it for 20 years. Even though he's a great official, we're still going to yell at him about too many charge calls. But
yeah.
I joke, Tim, we all love you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that I probably only reffed with one time. But, man, I thought we were on point. And
right.
You know, a three-man crew, you know, that's tough sometimes when you walk in and all three guys don't know each other.
Right.
So you really have to talk about, hey, what do you look for? And things like that. This year, myself, Rocky Keeling, and Tyler Holmes have all kind of decided. We emailed all the assigners and said, hey, can you put us three together? We worked several games with each other last year. So obviously I'm very comfortable with those two guys and those, you know, I've reffed a ton with Travis Wiley. You know, he's a guy that I reffed with a ton in the summertime. But there's, you know, there's probably 20 guys, I don't know, that I would feel comfortable with. Yeah.
The reason I respect officials, and I know people say, wait a minute, Seidel, man, the way you've been over the years, come on. But it's because when I try to officiate myself, like at our camps, I can never, you know, like, I'm just terrible. And the guys start getting irritated with my calls, and then I literally have to light them up and make them afraid to even look at me wrong because I'm blowing call after call. Just getting the angles and obviously running and being in position, it is a very difficult job. That's what, yeah, I think that's as big a part as the shortage of anything, is just how tough it is to be a basketball official compared, you know, I mean, no offense to volleyball officials or soccer officials, but it's just a different deal. The mid guy in soccer is a tough, but being a basketball official is a tough job. And we do appreciate it despite side marks and side comments on this podcast. But no, we appreciate you coming on, Scott. It was good talking to you. And we will see you down the road when you come to Olivet. Like I said, we'll take care of you. But again, we're not coming to Jackson County, Olivet. Not while I'm coaching. I just can't do it anymore. So anyway, take care, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.